Jeremy.
Hey, Graham, how's it going?
Hey, how are you?
Good, how are you?
Good to hear your voice, Jeremy.
Well, good to hear you finally, you know? 'Cause I've always liked the videos you guys put up, and those are always fun. And the pictures.
I mean, you've actually put up the first weblog in a way, like as in video log.
Yeah, that was my first attempt.
Yeah, what we're trying to do over here is find a way of making it more enjoyable and somewhere in between what the lifestyle bakers are doing and the professional bakers using modern equipment, provers, retarder provers, that type of thing.
Yeah.
But yeah, so I've been to New York once, and that was just a stopover for 2 days,
Right.
and it's a completely different dynamic to anywhere in Australia. I guess Sydney's the closest to it, but as I say, I didn't spend time in New York, so I don't know much about it, and I only get a sense of it from what we see on TV, really. So I don't know how it compares to well, definitely it's what we've got here in where I am at the moment, which is we're north of a major city in Queensland. Like we're an hour and a half north. It's got to be a lot different.
Sure, I'm assuming the temperature is probably a lot different than here, that's for sure. I mean, you guys are all the way on the bottom of the earth, I'd say.
Well, we're kind of halfway up Australia. Like Australia's, you guys talk about as being down under, but we're still halfway up, and we're nowhere near the equator, but it's in what they call a subtropical area. So, we do get hot temperatures and humidity, but we also get very cold temperatures because where we live, we're about 400 meters above sea level, and we're about probably 15 kilometers back from the sea. And it actually gets down to, close to freezing here in winter, but the average, I guess, minimum in winter would be not minus three, +3 or something like that. And it rarely gets to that. But yeah, we have a fire going, and I guess in winter time you actually feel like baking as well, because that's one thing I found moving to Queensland. We've only been here for 4 years, but I've always thought that bread is particularly artisan bread, and you're probably going to ask me to define artisan bread later.
Yeah, well, I've asked a lot of people that lately because I've been reading other websites where some guys are saying, it's all full of malarkey. It's just a made-up word just to make it sound interesting, you know?
Well, Jeremy, I've come prepared. I've come prepared to define that word today.
Oh, good, because, I've had Dan Lepard on before, and he's the one who got me hooked onto your site, and I love Dan's website, and I love his books, but I think I have more fun down in Oz, you know?
Oh yeah. Well, look, part of preparing for this quick little chat today was, Matey and I got onto the internet and had a bit of a look at, our site again, and also Dan's site, and they are different, and that's a good thing. Like I can't, I just couldn't even start to define how they're different. But I guess having more people, too, it does become less intimate, but they still have, intimate conversations, and they still talk about things the way we do, but it's just on a much bigger scale.
Sure. Why specifically sourdough rather than, just bread in general? Is sourdough a better way of treating bread rather than just using like commercial yeast?
I think so, but I mean, that's how it I guess began for me. As it didn't, my first contact with bread was just me traveling and being on the road and wanting to be able to make something out in the bush, if you like, things like, cooking in a camp oven and wanting to move on from a damper, and being able to do something that was very natural and very easy to create in any environment and without any outside influences. And that's how I came to sourdough. I mean, as it turns out, it's quite hard in that environment if you're traveling. I know the old sourdoughs did it in the, American culture, but the reality of, say, hitchhiking and stopping on the side of the road and putting up a tent and then making sourdough. I mean, those old sourdoughs, I mean, they must have had it down to an art to be able to do it consistently. And really, that's what I wanted to do, but that really didn't become a reality until I started baking commercially. And yeah, look, basically, sourdough for me, it's just a slightly different quality. It's better now. Well, is that what we were talking about?
Artisan baking on the side of the road in the outback.
Oh, okay.
Just throwing a shrimp on the barbie.
Look, no, what we were talking about is how I originally came to sourdough.
Right.
And basically, and why sourdough and not baker's yeast. Look, I mean, sourdough.com.au is purely sourdough, but we're open-minded to a point where, for instance, Sourdough, like, you know, sourdough from the forum, he has suggested a novel way of teaching people to make sourdough bread. And yeah, part of that technique is actually teaching them to make baker's yeast bread first, and then moving on, using that as a step, then to moving on to sourdough. And that's fine. Like it's not really strictly a political thing that we're not doing baker's yeast. But what I was saying before was that before we got disconnected was that for me baker's yeast is a step removed from from the original style of fermentation, from how bread came about
originally.
And there's nothing like, you know, I'm really flexible, and I'm really personally, and I guess I'm also speaking from a point of view of the website, it's quite flexible, but baker's yeast is an industry process, and to get to make bread with baker's yeast, you have to go through industry basically to get there. And what I was trying to talk about before was that the idea of being able to, you know, go hitchhiking or go traveling, and I mean, as it turns out, if you go traveling and you want to make bread, it's probably easier to go and buy baker's yeast to make bread. But originally, when I was younger, the concept that I really enjoyed was being able to do everything without any inputs from outside, without having to depend on, you know, any industry inputs. And that was the, you know, the romantic idea of sourdough. And for me, that still continues on a bit. But, I can see that there's also strength in people doing particularly longer fermentations with baker's yeast. And, people can talk about anything and come to the site and talk about anything, but I really feel that our focus is sourdough.
Right. Well, I think there's a bias in the case of some of us on the site that we really enjoy it a lot more than having to go to the commercial side. So we're a bit of purists and snobs sometimes.
I love that. I don't think it's a snob thing at all. And I think it's I am a little bit politically based, and it gets me into trouble sometimes. But there is a resistance on the other side as well. Particularly in Australia, we have a tradition here of training of master bakers. And that tradition is, you know, focused around baker's yeast.
Mm-hmm.
And even the, longer ferments with baker's yeast, that's only a relatively new thing in the training over here. And there is a guy called Leon Bailey who's trying to change that. He's in the TAPE system, in the college system, trying to get more fermentation, more looking at different ways of fermenting, not just baker's yeast, and he's trying to change that. But particularly the older school of bakers in Australia, they're not familiar with that, and the different styles of fermentation aren't a part of their art. They weren't trained in that, and it's not their fault. It's just the training. It's just the way the industry evolved here, and so there's a little bit of resistance, I come across it all the time, and I also come across bakers that, you know, traditionally trained bakers that are really prepared and trying to embrace the new baking, which considers fermentation as an essential art of baking.
Mm.
So, yeah, that's just a bit of where we're at in Australia.
Yeah. And where does most of the influence baking, you know, or in the artisan style, I would say, come from? I'm assuming Europe, or is it more of an English background?
No, it's definitely Europe, and it's originally there's a guy called John Downes who, back in the late 70s in Australia, I think that he got his inspiration from Europe. Not 100% certain on that, but I think somewhere he does say that he was inspired by something he'd seen overseas, and I think it was Europe. I don't think it was the States. But he introduced a method here, and no doubt there was some sourdough taking place in Australia before he introduced sourdough to Australia in the late 70s. Through, you know, there would have been other Europeans that were practicing their style of fermentation from France or somewhere in Europe. But he introduced it on a larger scale, particularly in the 80s, where he had a technique. And, I mean, getting a bit technical, his technique was, you know, using 40% leaven, 40% of flour weight. And there was no retardation or anything like that, which is very common today. There certainly wasn't in the original way that he was baking. And the bakers that baked with him and the bakeries that he started in Melbourne, that basically started sourdough on a larger scale in Australia. And originally he actually didn't want to use the word sourdough, because that's really a word that we got from you guys, like from America.
Yeah.
They were just doing it to raise bread naturally. It's similar to the approach that I had. And I, by the way, I hadn't heard of John Downs when I started doing it, but he ended up being an influence as well, because once you get more into sourdough in Australia, you generally become aware of him or what he did, you know, back in the 70s and 80s. So, and there's a lot of bakers that worked with John that now operate their own bakeries, and they do things a little bit differently, but yeah, they were definitely inspired by John, and he's still practicing in South Australia. He's got a bakery in South Australia that, it's a very humble situation. It's up on the website, and that's just the way he wants to bake now. He's not doing anything really over the top, and I think he's very comfortable with that. And it's really enjoyable, actually, just looking at the photographs of him standing, you know, in front of the oven that he built himself in his own backyard. But definitely Europe now has an even stronger influence, and there's a bakery that just started up in Melbourne, which probably has a stronger European influence than Sydney, and it's based in an old convent in Melbourne, and it's run by some European people, like with Italian background, and this is really interesting, because sourdough is really nothing unless you've got influences, and in their case, they're Italian influence, more than an influence with them. I mean, it's not an influence. They're Italians, and they just make food the way they know how to make food. And you walk into their bakery, and it's not just a bakery. You know, it's got all sorts of food, and they're, you know, serving coffee, and they're serving focaccia and sandwiches, and just the way they're mixing the toppings that go on the bread. It's very Italian, and you know, it's not just sourdough to them. It's just a way of life. So it's really quite interesting. It's really, that's the part I enjoy, seeing all the different influences. And you've got movements like slow food. And I've only been recently introduced to slow food. And that's something that's a different approach again. But they're also interested in, you know, natural fermentation and sourdough. But I'll let you talk, Jeremy. Say something.
Oh, no. I'm just absorbing everything, because, you know, I'm looking at your site as we speak, and, you know, I'm
on a bit. So,
What I love the most is, like, all your photos that you shot, because, you know, it's, like, great work, especially that bakery, Dench. That really, like, got me, and I was like, man, I wish I could go there.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, I just look at the pictures of the bread, and it's like, wow, it's amazing, you know? It's, like, makes me jealous. But one thing I was going to say was that, for me, I find Australia is, like, a microcosm of everything, because there's so much, so many different, people living there. I mean, from Europe, Asia, and that's why it's so nice to see, like, you guys doing rye breads there, like, German things. Because here in the States, we're more, you know, in tune with, like, Italian or French.
Okay.
We don't really have a German, like, per se, rye bread kind of culture here. And I've been... moaning about it with all the other bakers I speak with, and they're just, well, you know, people don't appreciate it, don't understand it, and that's why I always love going on the site, and, there'll be that, our fellow friend there, Mr. Bill in Garoka.
Oh, yeah.
Who's a real rye man, so.
Yeah, no, well, they don't seem to give a damn, really. Like, it's funny, because well, it's funny saying they don't give a damn, because part of what I think an artisan is that they do give a damn. But what I mean is that in Australia, you're right, you just make anything. Like, if something looks interesting, and you know, if someone's talked about it on the forum, or just, or you've seen a photograph, just go and make it. And I think that you do the same, though. Like, you're coming up with new stuff all the time, but you're talking more about the bakeries in general.
Yeah.
In the States. Like, they're making more of a lighter, like Southern European style bread, or?
Yeah, it's more Mediterranean. You know, you'll have like the ciabatta, the focaccia, and you know, like when I look at the stuff that I see on your side, it's like you go, wow, look at that fruited sour with, you know, like these different seeds. It's just a different, you know, like strain or look to the bread. It has a different feel.
I will say this: that I think the home bakers on the net are probably more adventurous than a lot of the commercial bakeries. So our commercial bakeries over here, they're still definitely the more popular breads. And the reason they do make them is because they're more popular from people coming into the shop. That's what they want. They want the lighter, you know, ciabatta, and they want, you know, they want the lighter white style breads.
Right.
And that's different to what I was doing too when I was baking. Like, the lightest we ever got was, we did make a 90% white bread once, but like unbleached white, because we couldn't get organic white at that time.
Uh-huh.
But it wasn't very successful. Our most popular lighter bread, and we ended up just doing this one, was a 50%, you know, freshly ground wholemeal and 50% white flour. And I never had much success with white, like 100% white flour. But like, I noticed on the forum and in other bakeries that everybody else has incredible success, and it's their most popular bread.
Right.
So that's kind of surprised me, but I haven't baked commercially for 15 years, so I'm a bit, you know, old-fashioned, I suppose. And that's a bit of a, it was a bit of a shock actually, because the site has evolved over 5 years, and but it's not a problem. I mean, I eat white bread all the time.
Yeah.
You know, white sourdough bread all the time. And
there's nothing wrong with it.
There's nothing wrong with it, and you know, it's really popular, and especially the longer fermented bread, they're very flavoursome. But yeah, initially it was a surprise.
And how did you decide to do the site initially? What was your reason for starting it?
Originally, because I kind of relate a bit to where Dan Lepard comes from, because I know that he has a background in photography.
Mm-hmm.
And I guess how it really took off was that I started mucking around with... I'm trained as a photographer originally, more as an art photographer than a commercial photographer. And I also dabbled in a bit of web stuff.
Uh-huh.
And I also trained as a baker. And that was kind of like when I was in my early 20s. And then out of that kind of mix, I started mucking around with websites and, you know, registered sourdough.com.au. And I wanted to put up an information site on sourdough, because I'd worked with sourdough at that stage. But basically it just sat idle for a long time. And then a guy called Richard Trousdale, just out of his generosity, he works in Sydney for one of the technical... like training centres in Sydney, and he just sent me a whole list of links to all the other sourdough sites on the web, like probably 50 or more, you know,
wow.
60 or 70 links, and just out of the blue he just sent them to me, and I put them up on the website. And of course that changes things, because once you've got links out, you know, you start to get links back, and so suddenly the site started to take off, and it really had nothing to do with me. Like, you know, I wanted to put information up there, but I'm an okay source of information on sourdough, but I'm not the best source. The best source is basically everybody else. And so the next thing after that was, actually before the forum came me, I decided to go out and take photos of friends' bakeries that I knew. And I took lots of photos, and they went up, and we had a gallery. And then shortly after that, the forum came. And the forum is really where it all started to happen, because that's where, you know, you guys came on board, and that's where the knowledge and, you know, the community started to happen. And of course, you introduced the term bread porn, which we'll never recover from. But that was a good way to describe what I'd done in the last 6 months, which was go and take all these photos, because I love taking photos at bakeries, and I just love being in bakeries and talking to bakers, and occasionally I join in and help. And so that's how it all evolved. And then the next step, of course, is the blog, and that's what's happening now, where, you know, we just want other people to take control of the site, if you like. Like, it's not
sharing.
Yeah, it's not. It's, you know, I know we manage the site, but you would have noticed I haven't been on the site that often recently. I mean, it's just I like to look in and see how it's going and occasionally take part in it. But I want to do more of that when I'm baking more frequently, which I'm not doing now. And I just like, wow, I mean, it's just, you know, as May said the other day, my son said the other day, it really is the biggest, most popular sourdough site on the net, like completely sourdough site.
Right.
And, I, you know, Dan's got a lot of talk about sourdough too, but, and it's for all the right reasons. Like, it's not, no one's got any motivation other than to be there and make sourdough. For people that they enjoy making sourdough for, and that's the best motivation you can have.
Sure.
So yeah, you know, that's how it's evolved, and I guess now we are looking at a level of sponsorship for the site, because you know, you want to help the site grow, and there is a commercial side to it, but we don't want to. We're looking very carefully at who we take on board in regards to sponsors, and how the whole thing can evolve as a more of an association of bakers and a network of bakers who aren't affected at all by any outside influences, which is what has gone wrong with you know, baking in Australia and probably baking all over the world, where, you know, for instance, in Australia, we've got our main baking association here is sponsored by a food fat manufacturer. So that's their main sponsor. They make, you know, they make fat basically, and that's fine. Except, you know, it's
sending the wrong message, right?
Well, you know, we all, you know, a bit of fat's fine. I mean, you know, it's like there's fat and bread, but it's not like, well, I'd like the main sponsor of this site to be someone that is actually interested in artisan bread,
right,
for instance. You know, and it changes the way that the whole process works. So when you have a competition, and or when you have a bake-off or something like that, and when in the, you know, when a you know, when there's a group of people gathering and that's sponsored by a food fat manufacturer, well, it just changes the whole way that the whole thing's run. And I'd like to see a situation where we have an association of bakers that aren't at all intimidated or concerned about, you know, where the money is coming from, where the sponsorship's coming from. And so ultimately that's what we'll do. But that's something that will run kind of in unison with the sourdough.com.au. That's more probably of a, you know, commercial thing that I'm doing at the same time on the other website, which is called artisanbaker.com.au, but they're very related. They're very connected.
Yeah, because I mean, I'm just fascinated by the site, how it's grown so much since I joined, and that's going to be coming up in November, my first year anniversary. So I'm real happy about that.
Yeah. I can't believe it's only been a year.
Yeah, I mean, it feels like ages already.
Yeah. No, that's just crazy, because and it's funny because the people that joined originally, like in the forum, they're still there.
Right.
And they've just grown. Like, they really started off, a lot of them, as beginners. And through, you know, contact with people as bizarre as Ken Bake and yourself and, you know, everybody else.
Yeah.
It's like now it's at a situation where I want to direct beginners somehow to what all of you are talking about in the forum. Like, I want to somehow, and that's what's happening now, particularly with like posts from people like Sourdom, where he, you know, he's virtually got a beginner's blog there, and, you know, I can direct beginners to him,
sure.
and also to all the other forum members that are now, you know, they have a lot more knowledge and they're doing it every day or, you know, at least twice a week. So it's really changed in a way. It's got to the point where maybe we should have moderators or something like that. But I don't know. What can I ask you, Jeremy? What's your experience? Do you think that when you have moderators on a site, like when you have people that, you know, are empowered to make decisions about, you know, who's posting what and whether or not it's a good post and this, that, the other, do you think, because I'm worried about that, I'm thinking, well, at the moment the site has no moderators.
Yeah.
And no, in fact, no post has ever been removed except the porn stuff.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, even when, you know, I think someone says something and they're a bit kind of off their head at the time, we still keep it there.
Sure.
Or do you think that, because there's a situation now where we could have moderators, like all the people like yourself that have been there for a year. What do you think? I mean,
I just did an interview with a guy in France, David Leibowitz, and he was just talking about how the blogging and websites are like so democratic in a way.
Yeah. You know,
that, then I even noticed we had a few scrums with some people on the site.
Yeah.
And you know, I guess we kind of sort things out on our own, and people just kind of like go away, or they don't talk to each other, and it's kind of like, you know, it's kind of okay like that. I don't think you need moderators. I think that's a little maybe sounds too, you know, having an umpire there, an arbitrator.
Yeah.
Yeah.
No. That's how I felt about it. So forget it. We won't have moderators. We don't need them. I mean.
Yeah. We just love your pictures. Love your picture so much. I'm missing all the good pictures and all the great bakeries you visit.
Oh no, it's not about my pictures, is it? Oh, I've got a whole lot of new pictures to put up.
Oh good.
I mean, I've got two new bakeries to add. You know, but what I'm looking forward to is you know, I really feel like I'm letting the team down because what I need really badly is I need a situation where I'm baking or I've got bakers that I'm working with.
Right.
And I'm really inspired by the video that you've put up recently. And what I want to do is set up video camera, you know, at the baking station.
Right.
Right in front of the baker, 24 hours a day. You know, somehow we'll keep the, you know, hopefully there'll never be a, you know, a pest running across the floor. Because, you know, this thing would be amazing if you just log on any time. I mean, it's probably been done, but something where we've got more of a, you know, even more tactile connection with the baker. The photos are great, but at the end of the day, the still photos, you know, it's still a lot about the photographer. It's a lot about the person behind the camera.
Yeah.
And I'd love there to be a, you know, more immediate connection with the baker. And I also want to have a more of an immediate connection with bakers. You know, living and working, and I'm trying to do that now. I'm trying to interest a French baker who's in Australia at the moment in coming over and working with me and running a bakery here in Queensland and possibly moving you know, to other states at a later stage. Yeah, so I don't know.
I'm packing my bags now. So.
Oh, you're welcome to. I mean, that's the kind of situation. I mean, this bakery that we're hoping to get going in Queensland. If you turned up at the local airport, I would come and pick you up and anyone else that's a member of the forum.
Well, I'll ride my bike over. Don't worry.
if you join the forum, basically that ticket is your ticket from the airport to the bakery because I'll come and pick you up.
All right.
And seriously, or you know, provide a bike if you prefer. I mean, you prefer to ride everywhere, don't you, Jeremy?
Oh, sure. Bikes are more fun.
Yeah, they are. I mean, if you can do it in New York, you could do it here because it's quite flat along the coastline here. So.
Right.
Yeah, but I mean, riding in New York, doesn't that? I mean, riding with in all the smog and stuff. How does that affect you?
Pretty badly. I mean, I get allergies here, and the pollution's really awful. But I escape once in a while. I cross the Hudson River, go to New Jersey, and ride up into the more you know, wooded areas to. Yeah. Get some breathing air, or I'll go to Colorado and see my brother and get some Rocky Mountain air. So that's always fun.
So is Colorado where the mountains are? It's kind of
oh yeah, that's kind of, like our Alps. Yeah.
Yeah. So but really feels fresh and clean.
Oh, extremely clean. I was cycling in a rainstorm one time and hailstorm actually. But we went up to this plateau, and there were, like, mushrooms everywhere. My brother was picking mushrooms, and I said, I'm getting out of the storm. You guys can do whatever you want. I'm going back to the ranch, you know?
Yeah.
But, yeah, it's pretty exciting out there. I mean, we've even talked about opening a bakery in Colorado, possibly.
Yeah.
But I don't know. I'm stuck in New York for the time being, but, you know, who knows what will happen. Maybe I'll be lucky.
Yeah, so are you committed to being in the USA? Like, is that where you are?
Well, I'm fortunate because my mother's French and I have a dual nationality.
Oh, okay.
So if I really wanted to, I could go back to Europe. I just don't know where, how, and what place I would go to. I mean, I love France. When I was there, I mean, that was like my total, like, my food orgasm. I went to Paris and looked at every bakery I could and just like...
It all comes back to sex with you, doesn't it, Jeremy?
Well, bread's very symbolic.
Oh, it does. And actually, what's that joke? Because I had a look at the forum yesterday and today. Someone's made some joke about some kind of purple organic something or other. Oh, flour. I think it's Techpo or Tech... No, Techpo's... I think Techpo wants to know all about it, what the joke is, and...
Oh yeah, that was the purple flower that Carla does, and Marcus was using purple flower and he was complaining about it, and it just gets a little weird sometimes in the in these posts, you know. You start going, what are these people talking about, you know?
Yeah.
And there's a lot of coded words, and you're like, what does that mean?
Yeah.
Lost in translation.
Yeah, well, I half wondered that people were worried because. People have probably realised now that my son Matey, he's actually, you know, doing most of the work in the forum, like deleting porn stuff and all that.
Oh boy,
all the spam. And I thought, oh, maybe some people are worried that they can't, you know, mention things because Matey's doing the work on the site, and he's, you know, 15. Oh, he's actually 14. He's 14.
Right.
But the thing is Matey, we let him. He's exposed to absolutely everything, like any kind of, you know, movie or any. Anything that's not, you know, that's not, anything that's not criminal, basically.
Okay.
You know, we're just like that with our kids. Like, they kind of make their own minds up, and he, so I just thought I'd mention that, if anyone's listening, that,
Oh, well, I was going to send him a copy of Swept Away. It's a great film with Giancarlo Giannini. He'll love it. He'll love it. Love it.
Oh, really?
Yeah, oh, it's like one of the best.
Oh, okay.
Madonna made a version, but it's not the same thing.
Oh, wow.
Oh, yeah. No, it's like one of the best Italian romance films ever. It's really great.
Oh, how are you going to send that?
Oh, I'll make a copy or something, and I'll send it off to you guys.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
No, that'd be great. No, please. Look, it's kind of, it's just strange. I mean, it's just, I'm going to say it's bizarre, but it's not really. I mean, just talking to you at the moment and sitting in a garden in Queensland and,
oh, lucky
about
you.
Oh, yeah, it is. It's good, but you kind of crave different experiences, and for us, a different experience really is moving to another state in Australia.
Uh-huh.
We don't get outside of Australia. Although
so it's your little walkabout then.
Yeah, but we don't just travel. We move somewhere and live there,
uh-huh.
Largely because we just find that's just the easiest way to do it. We've got three kids, and every probably 5 or 6 years, we just generally sell. Well, we
pack up and move.
Yeah.
Oh, that's cool.
Yeah, it's a good way to kind of really get to know an area too.
Sure.
And I was worried about Queensland. I was worried in terms of bread, but it's turned out to be that like a misconception. I thought that the hotter climate wouldn't suit artisan breads because often artisan breads are heavier.
Right.
But that's just not right. Like in Brisbane, we've got several huge bakeries that are making artisan style breads, and one of them makes what I call a genuine artisan bread where it's just not compromised at all.
Mm.
And, you know, they sell thousands of them. So, it's funny. Like, I just thought the warmer climates wouldn't suit the slightly heavier breads, and it's just not, that's not the case. I think people just slice them thinner.
Well, I mean, we're becoming like a subtropical country now with the way weather patterns are around the world. So
really?
I'm sort of used to like burning bread in like blazing hot, humid, disgusting, polluted air. And we had a blackout here recently, and for 7 days. No, it was almost 9 days. And I was baking bread while my wife was in Ecuador visiting her family. And I was just baking bread like every single day. And I said, you know, this is almost like a bakery. It's hot enough to be a bakery.
Yeah.
So.
So you're talking like to get into the like high 20s for you is like a, that feels pretty warm.
Well, we've actually gotten above that.
I'm talking Celsius.
No, we've gotten even higher. I mean, Fahrenheit-wise, we've gotten, like, into the 100-degree weather here.
Yeah.
And that's, you know, it's not really normal for here, but it's been happening gradually over the years. So you start to kind of get, you get acclimated to it, so. But
yeah.
It's not comfortable, especially in a big, nasty city like New York.
Yeah.
So it does do things to your bread. I mean, I've been working with rye a lot more now because I love rye bread. I grew up in Europe when I was little, and I brought back all those tastes of Europe when we came to the States. And every time I've gone back to live there, or I was there for 3 years in the army, it's like, you know, it's like I always go, oh, good rye bread from Germany with a big sausage or pretzels. You know, it's like the best thing. You know,
yeah.
So I really miss those flavors. So I try to reincorporate them in the baking that I do at home. But
sorry.
I just wish more bakers were doing it here, and thank God, you know, I found Jeffrey Hamelman's book, and I got to meet him once, and I interviewed him, and I want to go take a course up there in Vermont with him. It's going to be quite a feat trying to do it, but I will try.
Yeah. Well, one thing that Mady suggested, my son, was that the idea of getting a book together.
Uh-huh. That's what I'm planning to do for my site as well. I have all my notes from all the restaurants and places I've worked, and I said, you know, I should just put something together here.
Well, if you find a good publisher, can you let us know about them?
Oh,
we
sure.
Can try. We haven't approached anyone yet, but if you wanted to do something kind of concurrently, we'd love to get the people on the site into a book.
Cool. You're Mac people. I mean, Macintosh, you can make your own book.
Yeah, we can do it. Like, we can do it all here. That's what I did in between what I'm doing now and photography. I was kind of teaching design at a uni, but I think you really do need a publisher. Like, even when you get the raw material together.
Well, actually, I know an editor who does cookbooks, and I haven't seen her in years, but she used to be my wife's boss, and I could actually talk to her about it and see what she would suggest, and maybe we could put our brains together.
Yeah, no, I'd love to hear about that.
Sure.
But I mean, there's bakers in that forum that you could take out of a home environment and stick them straight into a commercial environment, and there'd be the initial shock of nonstop kind of sweating for, you know, 8-10 hours or longer, and disorganized, you know, kind of lives initially. But as far as recipes go and skill and variety. Because this is what you were talking about before, more variety and the guts to try something different. You'd have a situation there where, I think your customers would actually be happier because they'd be coming in and there'd be all these different types of bread and new experiences, and it'd be fun. And I think that's, you know, that is what is missing from a lot of commercial bakeries, is that...
it's a standardized format, in a sense.
Yeah,
that's
it. You don't get that flexibility and... I mean, unfortunately, it also comes down to, you know, to dollars and cents, and you can't avoid that.
Sure.
You know, you've got to find out, you know, where your margins are and things like that. But I think there's something in between. I think there's, and there are bakeries that are doing it, and there was a bakery in Sydney once that had potential to become like what I think we're imagining now, where you've got that flexibility and people dropping in and new recipes coming up, but. That bakery is no longer there.
Mm. It was at a Gertrude Bakery.
Yeah, actually, it was. It was a Demeter Bakery.
Uh-huh.
And the thing is though, I mean, they're not particularly flexible. The one that I worked with, it was when you say, did you say Gertrude?
Yeah, the one that you had posted on your site, the one that had that humongous rye bread that I, every time I look at it, I just go totally berserk.
Oh, that's okay. Okay, yeah, no, yeah, that's Gertrude Street.
Yeah.
Yeah. Oh man, I'll tell you, they're an amazing couple, and I was just lucky to get them in their last, you know, few weeks of business after.
Yeah.
I don't know how many years, but No. I mean, that's a funny thing. That's the kind of irony of this whole baking thing. You get people that are inflexible with their bread making, and they'll often make the best bread on the planet.
Yeah.
And that's an example. I mean, Gertrude Street. Sure, they were flexible in the point of view. They were artists. Like, they were actually painters, like art painters. And
right.
Or I know the guy was, and I think, I forget their names, but I think the woman, she was a photographer. And, again, they were flexible in terms of their own creations, but they were very committed to what they made. And, you know, what they made was what they made, and they weren't going to, you know, I don't know how much flexibility they would have had in terms of varying their own creations, because they were so proud of them, and they were so, you know, put them on display. I mean, these were art pieces, and you know, you hear of, oh, I have heard of an art exhibition where somebody put a loaf of bread, like that loaf of rye, in the centre of a gallery with a price tag of, it might have been $18 or $40 on it or something like that, and it was on a podium, and it was, look, you could have put $200 on it, and that's what it would have been worth, because that's the artist's input, that's their connection with what they're making. So they were like that. And yeah, no, that wasn't the bakery I was talking about, but Gertrude Street, definitely, like, that's a really shame they're not there, because they were true artisans. They were completely connected and committed to what they were doing, and on such a small scale. No,
has anybody taken over their place that was there?
No. I think, what happened was they actually owned the building they were baking in. And basically they were working their guts out, working long hours. And it got to a point, I imagine, that because they owned that building, they probably could have got more money for it renting it out.
Right.
Somewhat. I mean, they did try and rent it out to a baker. They tried to interest a good baker in running the bakery, but I think at the end of the day, people realised the level of commitment that they needed to bake at that level, and they weren't, you know, they just couldn't do it. So
sure.
They ended up renting out, I think, to probably someone that does fashion. I haven't visited since, but the last I heard, which was a long time ago, was that someone was selling, you know, fashion out of it or something like that. But that could have changed. But because they own the place, you know, they're getting a return on that now, and not
sure.
Having to work all those crazy hours.
Because
they didn't have any. You know, I think they might have done some. Yeah, they did retard a little bit, but you know, the bakery that we're looking at starting up and possibly starting up several of them. And by the way, we're looking at a situation where we're just putting other bakers into these bakeries, and
sure.
It's nothing like franchising or anything. But we are looking at setting up bakeries where they're fully kind of functional from the point of view where someone can go into that bakery, either a baker or an artist, and, you know, a sculptor. I don't really mind what you do if you're committed to what you're doing. And they can walk into that bakery, and it's set up in such a way that, you know, they can bake and have a life. So there is a proof of retarder. You know, there is a way of doing things, but at the same, on the same point, the same token, they have a way of varying the way it's done, so that they can be an artisan, they can add their own input to it. And I'd really like that to be able to be done without people killing themselves, without people cutting off, you know.
So would that mean that you're using like a liquid levain rather than like a firmer kind of levain?
Yeah, no, it's funny you should say that, because I would have said that originally. Like, I would have said liquid levain, mainly because there's a machine that Pavila, and you probably know how to say it better than I do, because you've got that French ancestry. Is that how you say Pavila?
Pavila.
Yep. Thank you. Because they have that machine. You know, it's very expensive. It's like $20,000, but
sure.
It keeps a liquid leaven under control, if you like. Like, you can actually have a degree of control over a liquid leaven that you haven't normally got. So, you know, traditionally in all the bakeries that I've had contact with, to control their leaven, they either, you know, wheel it closer to the oven where the heat is to warm it up,
yeah,
or they throw it in the cool room to cool it down, or if
right.
It's in a cold climate, they just throw it into a cold room. And that's labour intensive. You have to be there to do it. And labor intense is not bad unless it totally kills your whole life.
Yeah.
Which can mean the end of your bakery. So these machines, which yeah, they're 20,000, but you can have it. You know, it has basically a jacket around it that is a refrigeration jacket, and it can control it, and it can control the temperature of your leaven to whatever you want, and to the point where you can say, right, leaven, be ready in 15 hours. You know, leaven, be at your peak in 6 hours.
Right.
And that's the kind of level of control we might need to give artisans to be able to actually function as artisans and have a life.
Yeah.
So I'm not, and I think Dan said this too. I've read on his site that he believes that you can make a high quality, bread, artisan bread.
Right.
I mean, he talked about making masses of them, so you can make a lot of a high quality bread and still keep the quality good.
Uh-huh.
I mean, I haven't seen that in practice. And that's not necessarily to do with the equipment. It's more to do with the structure of the organization making the bread and what happens to that structure when they start making 10,000 loaves rather than, you know, 300 or 400 loaves.
Right.
You can't really blame the equipment. So, so I can see a situation where artisans walk into a bakery that has really good control over their leaven. And we talked before about liquid leaven versus a stiffer leaven.
Mm-hmm.
And it's funny because I always thought that a liquid leaven would be easier to control, and it certainly is in that circumstance, like where you have good temperature control. But where you don't have good temperature control, there's a local bakery in Brisbane, and they make a stiff levain, and it's the same consistency as dough, so it's mixed in a spiral mixer. And they produce a really amazing bread, and I may as well just say the name of the bakery is actually called Soul Bakery, and they're not on my site. Like, I've only been in there once, and I haven't followed it up as much as I should have. But they make a really good bread, and they use a stiff levain. And I've always related stiff leavens with doing a hybrid style bread.
Mm-hmm.
So we're doing also using baker's yeast, but
like using the old piece of the dough from the batch.
Yeah, but they don't do that. It's 100% sourdough, if you like. There's no baker's yeast in Soul Bakery.
Right.
And it's a stiff levain, and there's, I know some of the bakers that work there, and there's very little control. It's, you know, wheeled into a cool room, or it's wheeled wherever the right temperature is, and there's no great deal of accuracy in the way that it's measured, like the way that the new levain is made from the old one.
Right.
There's no great degree of accuracy there. And that's really interesting because I know that happens a lot with liquid leaven, especially in Melbourne and a lot of the bakers that worked with John Downs, who I talked about before, which I don't know if that will be included in the interview, but he, there's no great deal of control. You can use, if you're using liquid leaven and you've made your dough, and you might have made more dough than what you thought, so you've used up more liquid leaven than what you thought, and you've got less liquid leaven left to make your leaven for the next day.
Right.
So what? You know, so what if I've only got, in talking in terms of, big quantities, you might only have, a few litres left, like 2 or 3 litres left, and you're going to make, 50 litres or something like that for the next day.
Right.
Big deal. I mean, normally you'd aim to have more left over than that, but these guys get away with it, and that really, I actually believe that is possible because I've done it myself with liquid leaven, but I didn't think that would be possible with a stiff leaven.
Right.
More because of the speed at which, leaven works in a stiff dough, which is slower.
Right.
So you've got less, you've got a less a slower rate of activity with the microbiology. So. But anyway, they do it, and it works, and they've got really good bread, and we get it up here all the time. So
yeah.
That's amazing. So it does show you that with sourdough, you can get away with anything if you've got an idea of what's expected. So if you can monitor those different stages of sourdough bread making, if you know what is expected at each level of control, then I think you can get away with just about anything.
Yeah, because I find, like, with yeast, you're kind of, like, tied to the yeast. It ferments really quickly, or... Whereas sourdough, it'll give you a break if you're a little bit too fast or too slow. You know, you can manage it a little bit more. It's a more flexible kind of product than yeast is.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. No, I think that's the case. And I mean, it does eventually go off, as you know.
Yeah.
And I mean, there are some bakers here that add, and well, are they artisan bakers? I don't know, but they're adding, you know, vitamin C, ascorbic acid.
Yeah.
As a controller, and I mean, I've said on my website that, you know, my own feeling is that if you're using an additive, that as a control rather than, you know, you doing a manual artisan control,
uh-huh.
like rather than using skills as a baker, you're using an additive.
Yeah.
I've suggested that, well, you know, maybe that's taking away from the idea of being an artisan.
Mm.
But, look, I don't think we can be too prescriptive about what an artisan is. I know I'm getting back to that again, but
yeah.
They are doing that, and they are, not a lot of them, but some of them are adding ascorbic acid, and
sure.
you know, which is the main ingredient, of course, of, you know, well, I've been told, of bread improver.
Yeah.
So they're, even with sourdough, there are levels where the controls can fall to bits and you can be left with a mess. And, I mean, the most common one I see is people go all the way through a, it could be 25-hour process or longer, they're 36 hours, who knows what it is. They get to the very end, and incredibly, you know, the dough falls to bits, is left for too long
yeah.
as a formed dough piece, whether in a banneton or, you know, proving up in a tin or however it's proving up. And it's just funny, after all these hours of work, and it just falls to bits at the last minute. That's really depressing, and people get really, really sad when that happens.
Yeah.
Really,
I would be all that work. Wow.
Yeah, really upset. And, yeah, I've seen it happen quite a lot. It's just kind of funny because all that work, and then it falls to bits at the last minute.
Well, before my vacation, I kind of, like, neglected my sourdough and or my levain and kind of just tossed them in the fridge. I didn't feed them. I left, and
yeah.
I'd moaned about it on my little blog on your site. And when I came back, they were livelier than ever. And I was like, wow, I can't believe it. Just, you know, in total neglect, left them out to sit and warm up, and they were kicking away.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Nah. Looks, you know, people get away with it. I mean, it's got a lot to do with the flour quality as well.
Right.
Which I don't know enough about flour, but people are talking a lot these days about the falling value of flour and, you know, the way the enzymes are behaving.
Yeah.
And how that's very important, particularly if you're retarding your dose. And, you know, we need to have more discussions about that.
With oh, definitely.
Like Chembake and... but I'm amazed. Like, when I get onto that website and just see how people are talking and, you know, getting way beyond what I know. And, you know, it's just amazing. And that's... just how open-minded people are,
yeah.
which is what we didn't have in the whole baking community, like in Australia. We had it amongst a small community, and now it's amongst a much bigger community, and it's moving into the more conventional baking circles. You know, it's really... I mean, I think that's ultimately what will change the quality of bread, is basically when bakers are talking and not grunting. Because that... No, seriously, that's been one thing that apprentices have complained about for years, is that... you go and work under someone that knows what they're doing, and they don't kind of tell you anything. Like, they just grunt.
Yeah, they don't share the information.
No, I mean, they're making it in front of you, and you're learning some hand skills, and you know, you're learning how to flour a bench by, you know, chucking it a certain way in the air, and it lands in a big dust cloud. But it's like, and it's really nice working with these people, because this, I don't know what it is. I think it's especially with guys. I mean, I baked once in a cold climate, and in the breaks you'd go out to the flower shed, and at that time it was kind of people would smoke or have coffee. Actually, I don't know how safe it is to smoke in a flower shed, but people would light up a cigarette and have a cup of tea or coffee and sit out there for 5 or 10 minutes.
Yeah.
And there's that kind of bonding that happens.
Yeah.
And I think, I suspect it's more of a male thing where you know, The guys can kind of respect men that grunt and don't share a lot, but they're obviously very good at what they do. But in the end, that just gives me the shits. And you learn nothing and you walk away going, well, I mean, actually, I think that what that does do, it gives you intuition because you learn to bake, you get the experience, and so you learn to recognize when a dough is proven, and you learn to recognize when a dough piece is not formed properly and things like that. But, yeah, look, people would just talk more and not be completely academic and anal about it, which, again, happens, and
we'll forgive them.
What's that?
We'll forgive them.
Oh, we have to. I mean, it's just so funny, and especially when they make fun of themselves.
Yeah.
Which is what, I mean, back to the forum, that's how, you know, Ken Bakes kind of resurrected himself. I mean, basically, he has shaman status. This is, with this talking to you now, I don't know how much people will know the history of the forum, but, you know, Ken Bake being a very, you know, scientifically trained, you know, very well versed in microbiology and very technical in his approach to making bread, he's got that kind of status now on the forum where he's so highly respected because he really knows his stuff.
Yeah.
And despite sometimes he's really hard to, I mean, he's the kind of baker, I'll bet you, if I baked with him, he probably would have grunted a lot. But then when you can sit down with him and relax with him a bit, he opens up and he talks and he tells you everything you need to know.
Yeah.
So maybe what I was saying before about bakers grunting, maybe even those bakers that grunt a lot, they have that ability, if you put them in the right environment, to open up and tell you stuff. So really that's all we've done, and that's what you're doing as well.
Well, I mean, bread has always been considered like a slave culture anyways. You're stuck in a dungeon baking away and rolling dough all day long.
Slave culture.
Yeah, well, I mean, historically, I mean, it was looked down upon as like a really crappy job, you know. But I worked with a French guy at this bakery. I was fortunate to like volunteer myself to work nights after an 8-hour shift and do the whole night shift with this French guy, and he had a whole crew of African guys from from Senegal and the Côte d'Ivoire. And, you know, I could barely understand his French because he came from Roussillon or Toulouse, I think. And and his French was, like, barbaric. It was, like, total Provençal. But he was one of those journeyman bakers. He had, a little map of France on a medallion, you know. And I just, you know, I just said, wow, this guy knows what he's doing. And, and you know, he took me in. He kind of, like, goaded me about the way I was handling the dough. And I had no shaping abilities. But, you know, he was really nice, and at the end he said, here, take all the recipes. They're yours. I'm going back to France anyways.
Oh.
And the best was working with these African guys and just saying, wow, these guys are masters. They know their stuff. And he was even showing them, saying, listen to the dough. It's talking to you. Feel the dough. See? You see? And he could just touch you and tell you the temperature, and you'd be like, wow, this guy has a total clue of what's going on.
Yeah.
And, of course, at the end of the night, he'd give me loaves of bread to take home. He goes, here, that's your pay. So that was always nice.
So, I mean, that's a beautiful way to learn, isn't it? I mean, just working with someone, and if you do it for long enough, you're going to be able to bake just the way they are.
Oh, yeah.
Good point. I mean, look, Jeremy, I'm really open-minded about the whole way people learn, and I just get annoyed when you get bakers that aren't open-minded.
Yeah.
And I mean, I had an experience recently where I was at a trade fair, and in fact, I wrote a blog about this and then took it down about a week later because I thought it was too insultive to just bakers in general.
Mm.
But basically, I had a really good time at this trade fair, which was on baking. And I was walking around. I was walking around with one of the best bakers in Sydney, who works at a bakery called Fuel, and his name's Chris.
Uh-huh.
And I thought I'd mention him because I photographed his bakery, but didn't get any photos of him. And his mother was very upset. but his name's Chris, and I walked around with him at this trade show, and we talked to a lot of people and got a lot of respect. And on those 2 days, and then the third day, I walked around the show and was talking to people and, you know, to bakers. And by the way, I attended that trade show with a kind of label. You know how they give you those sticky labels when you walk in?
Yeah.
And the name of my company is actually, because I run a company to do all of this, is called Artisan Baker Proprietary Limited. That's the name of the company. And so I had this sticky label on my shirt that said artisan baker. Okay. So I was walking amongst all these kind of trade qualified bakers who were very, very traditionally trained at, you know, TAFE and this, that, the other at college. And I had this label saying artisan baker, and everything was going fine. And I thought everything was fine. Then I walked out to my car, and suddenly I had this message on my mobile phone. And I thought, oh, great, you know, because I've got this message and everything's hunky-dory, and opened up the message. And basically what it was someone had accidentally kind of tried to phone me and thought that they couldn't get me. And I think they must have thought they'd hung up. But really, they were actually still leaving a message on my voice machine, didn't know it. And the message was basically these two bakers, you know, bad-mouthing behind my back, saying, oh, you know, he's not a real baker, were actually the words. And by that, they meant that, oh, he's not, because the way I did my training was I worked for bakers and then applied for recognition as a craft baker.
Uh-huh.
Through like an industry body in Australia, which is different to going through the whole
traditional role.
TAFE. Well, I did an apprenticeship, if you like, because I worked for qualified bakers for you know, 3 years, but I didn't do the whole training thing where you're, you know, trained to use. Well, you know, you're trained as a conventional baker.
Mm-hmm.
Anyway, which by the way can be quite good. You can learn quite a lot that way. But anyway, these guys were saying, and he's not a real baker, and there was all this laughter, and I felt pretty bad, and I've got a recording of it, and it's quite interesting, and I actually had that up on my site for a while.
Yeah.
And I wrote this whole piece about, you know, what is a real baker? And it was an older person that said it. It was an older so-called master baker who I have kind of termed masturbator. And by the way, there's nothing wrong with masturbating, Jeremy.
Oh, no.
You would know that, as anyone would know that.
Oh, I was in the Army, so I know it well.
But hold just 1 minute. Taylor, upstairs. Yeah. My daughter's come down and wants the camera.
Oh, okay.
But the thing is that it really pisses me off when you get these bakers, and generally I call them old school bakers, who only know, you know, they've been trained a certain way. And basically, if, you know, you didn't go through the system and learn how to use all the industry stuff, and, you know, a lot of these bakers, they run bakeries where basically they bake to what the industry representative says. So an industry rep walks in with a particular, you know, bag of this, that, or the other, and they say, look, here's this great new product, here's how you use it, blah, blah, blah. And it's not the baker's fault that they listen to the industry rep.
Sure.
And they use that particular product. Or maybe it is, I don't know, but it's more to do with how they were trained. And I was really pissed off about that because, in my mind, a real baker is someone that actually, you know, gives a damn about making bread. And, you know, as far as I'm concerned, in Australia, we've got a whole lot of artisan bakers that never went through that training. They weren't trained traditionally. They're not, some of them, or most of them, I'd say, aren't even trained in any kind of food. You know, methods. They're not chefs. Some of them are chefs, by the way. But
uh-huh.
And in a lot of cases, of course, chefs with their exposure and generally love of food make fantastic bakers. And by the way, I'm not trying to suck up to you, Jeremy.
Well, no, it's funny because in one of my, you heard my interview, I think, with Noel Smith, and he was kind of saying cooks were shitty bakers, and I was like, wait a minute.
who is this?
Noel Cometh from Tomcat Bakery here in New York.
He's a chef?
No, he's the owner of, he was a chef before, and he said, well, you can tell a cook's bread when you're in a restaurant. I was like, wait a minute.
Oh, no, I read that. I read that, but hang on. That's a cook rather than a cook that's become a baker.
Right, okay.
I listened to that. I probably didn't read it. I probably heard it because isn't it?
I kind of think of myself as a hybrid. You know, I went to school for both and you know, one later than the other, but, you know, I kind of, like, loved it both so much that I said, well, you know, I guess I can be the happy medium, you know?
Oh, look, cooks or chefs, I suppose, make – because I did hear that interview, and I don't know if he gave a straight answer to when you ask, you know, do chefs make good bakers?
Yeah.
And, yeah, chefs, I think, make the best bakers simply because you have to be open-minded to be a chef. You have to be flexible. You have to be prepared to play with new ingredients.
Right.
And that's what the best bakers are. And, you know, some of these, you know, that's the thing is, as I said at the beginning, I tend to get political, and that's just the way I you know, I worked as basically a full-time greenie for, you know, 3 or 4 years.
Mm.
And you know, I mean, you tend to look at things one way, but there are many ways of looking at things. And I still think there's hope for these bakers that were trained, you know, in a one-eyed way. And but back to chefs, chefs make great bakers. And I think that, you know, I really hope that we manage to turn a lot of chefs into bakers. I really think, I mean, is that appealing from a chef's point of view?
Well, I think it is for me because, I love to cook, but I think cooking takes more of your time in terms of you have to have plates, you have to have forks, you have to deal with waiters and napkins and all kinds of things. Whereas bread, it's you're there with the bread and it's controlling you, you're controlling it, and it's it's a different feeling when you're making it. I mean, I don't know, it's just, you know, it's a bit of romanticism, I think, when you really know what it's like when you're physically aching in the morning, you go, damn, I never want to do this again.
Yeah.
But there's a real beauty and quality to it. I think it's because my dad was an artist that I love, you know, the texture, the look, the whole thing, you know, and it, of course the taste. The final product's the most important, I think.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, well, I think that's different to chefing, isn't it? I mean, if you produce a plate, you know, I mean, I guess if it's a minimalist piece where you've got 3 or 4 ingredients on that plate, I guess that's easier to consider as a work on its own if it's got less ingredients. And bread, of course, is the ultimate. It's just, you know, ultimately it's flour and water and a couple of things thrown in.
Yeah.
Is that the trouble with things that chefs do?